descend myself. The Lord appears in each incarnation to save the world from irreligious principles and especially to protect his devotees. Prithyanaya sadhunam. Vamanadeva, for example, appeared to save the devotee Bali Maharaj. Similarly, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepted the abominable form of a fish, he must have done so to favor some devotee. Parikit Maharaj was eager to know about the devotee for whom the Supreme Lord accepted this form. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tsunamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Srinivari Prasthacha Desapadani Mukam Karati Vachalam Hungam Hungaya Tegidin Yakripa Tam Maham Vande Sri Guru Vinitani Vanshakalpa Tivivyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So this Srimad Bhagavatam is known as the Bhagavad Purana, the Mahapurana, the Bhagavad Purana. It's the sunum bonum of all Vedic Puranic literatures. And the fact that it's a Mahapurana is a sign of its greatness, Srimad Bhagavatam. And the qualifications of a Mahapurana is that a Mahapurana speaks of 10 topics. 10 topics have to be included in various ways in a Mahapurana. So the Srimad Bhagavatam certainly fits this qualification. And just like Sanatan Goswami in his Krishna Lila Stava, he prays, Asadu sadu dam da dayin ati nicho chataraka ahanamucha akadachin mam premna hrit kantayos pura. O Srimad Bhagavatam, O giver of saintliness to the unsaintly, O uplifter of the very fallen, please don't ever leave me. Please become manifest in my heart and my throat, accompanied by pure love of Krishna. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is very special in itself, an incarnation of Krishna, actually, and has come to save not only the reader of the Bhagavatam, certainly the reader of the Bhagavatam, but anybody who comes in contact with the knowledge, the information in the Bhagavatam. So this particular chapter, or this particular canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, is dedicated mainly to the topic Manvantarani, which is one of the 10 topics, and it speaks about all the different manus. The manu manvantarani topic of the Bhagavatam is not really exclusively dedicated to the manus. It's dedicated to Krishna's effort, or Krishna's pastime, of coming in different ways to save both the devotees and the principles of religion. And Prabhupada mentions this, or this is mentioned in the summary of the chapter, that Krishna comes not only to save his devotees, but he also comes to save humanity in the form of giving transcendental knowledge or preserving transcendental knowledge. So we see in both of the fish incarnations of Krishna that are mentioned here that in both cases he saved Vedic knowledge. He had the rishis on board. He saved the Vedas that were emanating from the mouth of Brahma while Brahma was yawning. We heard that yesterday. And in both cases, because an inundation was involved, water was involved, Krishna took the form of a fish. So as these 10 topics are woven through the Srimad Bhagavatam, although the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam is very much about Manvantarani, the other 10 topics are also mentioned a little bit here and there. So the first two, Sarga and Visarga, are not so much spoken about in this particular pastime, although we get the impression by the things or the living entities and the items that were placed on the boat that there was a plan that there would be a repopulation of the universe after the inundation. Because you see what he saved, right? He saved the Vedic knowledge, he saved the rishis, a few select people, he saved seeds, so that the population could be reestablished afterwards. I was reading that in Alaska, there somebody has invested a huge sum of money in building a giant freezer and putting in there all the seeds that they can find, so that in the event that there's a palaya, although they may not know about palaya, there will be seeds, destruction of the universe. In the event that there's an inundation of the universe, the seeds will be available. Somehow he's afraid of war, probably, so then the seeds will be there. So Krishna also gathered these things together, put them on the boat, had Satyavrata Muni attach the boat to the horn of the fish, and then Matsya saved the day. So we have this kind of premonition that there will be a creation again. But then the other topics are a little bit more clearly defined, because there's a description again and again in this canto of different storylines of how the different devotees came to the point where they were saved by Krishna, one after the other. So this topic is called Ishanu Katha, or the talk about the Isha, the controller, and how he appears again and again to save his devotees. But it specifically deals with the facts, nothing but the facts. So how it happened, the history of it all. And then we go to see how Krishna protects his devotees. Nanda mentioned that this is called poshanam, or the mercy, how God gives different devotees and different situations, he puts his mercy towards those things so that they become benedicted and relieved of suffering conditions. Also so that the material world becomes free of contamination, and ultimately they attain liberation, which is another one of the topics, mukti. So these are all prominent in different stories. In the Bali Maharaj story, we understand very much how Krishna, by his mercy on Bali Maharaj, gave him a special situation where he was allowed to become free of those things which contaminated his consciousness and attain liberation. Also, there's another topic where Krishna becomes victorious. He's always victorious in his efforts, and this is called sthana. And Krishna, no matter what he does and whoever he fights, we always hear that he becomes victorious. And then ultimately, or another one is uti, where we see that uti means the impetus, or that which makes us act, and generally it's material desire. So even in this canto, where we're describing Manus and various great saints, we are exposed by this Mahapurana to how material desire causes people to act in ways, even devotees to act in ways, that gets them in trouble. Right? It gets them in trouble. We read about Mohini Murti and how she took advantage of the fact that the demons were greedy. And because they had material desire, she was able to befool them as she was distributing the nectar. If they hadn't been so greedy, if they had been controlled, then she wouldn't have been able to bewilder them. And here also we have, in the Bali Maharaj story, we also see how Sukracharya's material conception of life kept him from completely realizing the absolute truth. And we had even Bali Maharaj, who at first was a little bit arrogant about his material wealth. Why are you only taking 3 steps of land? What's wrong with you? I could give you so much more, and you're only asking, and your feet are so small too. You know, you don't even have a big shoe size, and you're only asking for 3 steps of land. So we see again how this tendency, this uti, these material desires, they can keep us anchored in the material world. But the main topic of all these, of this canto, is still Manvantarani. And it tells us how the various Manus came one after another, after another, after another, after another, to protect religious principles in this material world. Yesterday we heard in class about the 10 main incarnations, but there are many other incarnations of Krishna, even in this canto, that are described. For instance, Mohini Murti, who I was just speaking about, she's not one of the 10. Dhanvantari also, Gajendra was saved by Hari, the Bhagavatam itself. These are all incarnations of Krishna. And Krishna appears to save us, to guide us, to help us, to make advancement. He's so merciful that he does this. And he's very, very kind that he, and a very, very able to think of new and exciting ways to appear. He looks at the situation and immediately adjusts. Like here, we needed a fish. Who would have thought? We needed a fish because the water was there. So Krishna, okay, I'll appear as a fish if that's what's necessary. With the churning of the ocean, he thought, let's see, how can we solve this problem? Well, a tortoise looks like it'll just do the job. And not only that, but I can scratch my back. I have this itching sensation. So I'll appear as a tortoise, and I'll get under that mountain and hold that mountain up so that they can churn the mountain. In so many different ways, Krishna shows the devotee that he is the Ashraya, which is the 10th of the 10 topics. That ultimately the Bhagavatam points through everything, through the Manvantara, through the Uti, through the Sarga and the Visarga, through the Svana, through the Ichanukuta, all the different topics, they all point ultimately to the Ashraya. So the plan of the Mahapurana Srimad Bhagavatam is that by the time we get to the 10th canto, we will have enough understanding, enough appreciation, enough realization of the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that we'll have complete confidence that he can do whatever's necessary to take care of business, and he'll be our ultimate shelter. In the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in the 56th verse, in the purport, Prabhupada talks about the Madhyapashraya words in that verse. It means that under the protection of the Supreme Lord, and that to a devotee who has engaged in Krishna consciousness, the Lord is very, very kind. In spite of all difficulties, he is eventually placed in the transcendental abode or Krishna Loka. He is guaranteed entrance there. There is no doubt about it. So as we watch Krishna, as we watch Krishna's ingenuity, his creativity in taking care of the problems of his devotees, we become more and more confident. There's one other of the 10 topics called Naroda, which means disillusion. And we see in this incarnation of the fish, there are two different kinds of disillusion there. The first incarnation was the secondary disillusion, or the time that Lord Brahma, he just kind of takes a nap. And while he's going to sleep for the evening, for the night, then the world is inundated. And so Krishna appeared as a fish to save the devotees. And then to save the Vedas, rather. And then the second time, another prayola, the end of the kalpa, then now Krishna appears again as a fish to save his devotees. And so we have this concept. Prabhupada quotes, the verse is quoted in the introduction again to this section or this chapter of the Bhagavatam, that Krishna appears whenever there's a rise in irreligion. I mean, he says that in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. And so he not only appears to save the devotees and vanquish the miscreants, but he also appears to give us something to talk about. Krishna appears to give us katha, because the devotees, what do? They like to enlighten each other and enliven each other by talking about Krishna. So if we didn't have anything to talk about, if Krishna wasn't doing anything except being an old man sitting in a big seat, giving edicts and protecting people and slaying demons, just giving judgments, then we wouldn't have such wonderful topics to talk about. But the Bhagavatam is full of nectar, wonderful topics to talk about endlessly. And the great devotees, they relish the Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavatam gives them remembrance of Krishna all over. Wherever they open the Bhagavatam, there's always topics to relish, and always understanding that Krishna is ultimately the Ashraya, that Krishna is ultimately helping us to advance in devotional service, and in whatever shape or form is necessary, he'll take that situation and he'll figure out how to make it work. So this, therefore the devotees with fixed intelligence, yavyasikatmika buddhi, with fixed intelligence, the devotee fixes his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and serves him with complete faith, and that Krishna will protect him, that Krishna will take care of him. And whatever Krishna does, he sees that as Krishna's protection. Just like Kunti, she saw Krishna's protection even in obstacles that appeared to be not very protective. We would look at necessarily Krishna's life, Kunti's life, and we might think that she wasn't protected by Krishna, that there were problems again and again. No one would fault Kunti if at certain times in her life she would become angry or frustrated with God, thinking, hey, wait a minute, I'm your devotee. What are you doing here? What's happening? My kids, they're all your devotees. They're great devotees. And what's happening here? How come Duryodhana, he's a bad guy, and he's getting the kingdom. We're going out to the forest. So what's the problem? But that's not how Kunti saw it. Kunti constantly was confident of Krishna's protection. There's a really nice conversation which is narrated by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita 9.31. And it's like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is connected to Krishna in such a way that he can actually understand how Krishna comes about the decisions he makes or the statements he makes. And he presents them in a way that's a dialogue, almost like he was there, he is there, and he is hearing Krishna's thought process. It's like he knows what's on Krishna's mind. So in this verse, Kshipram bhavati dharmatma, shvashvach chantim nigachchiti kaunteya pratijani hina me bhakti pranashati. Vishwanath Chakravarti relays this conversation that's quite amazing, and I would like to share some of it with you. It's a little lengthy, but I'll share some of it with you. So Vishwanath Chakravarti is narrating Krishna's thought process, and he says, and not only Krishna's thought process, but Arjuna's thought process, and what about Arjuna's thought process is inspiring Krishna to actually speak. So he says, Arjuna is asking, or someone might ask, but if someone is corrupted and has bad behavior, how can he be a sadhu? Why do you protect him? And this is answered. He should be considered as such and thought of as a sadhu. He should be considered. It is an injunctive statement. It is an injunction. If it's disobeyed, then there'll be a bad reaction. Unfavorable circumstances will happen. So then he says, well, but someone might say, one may be considered a sadhu partially to the extent that he's worshiping you. But if he's doing not perfect things, if he's not behaving properly, we shouldn't consider him a sadhu completely, should we? And then Krishna answers, we should never view him as not a sadhu. His determination is completely fixed. I may go to hell by my abominable behavior, but my consciousness will always remain fixed on service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even I may fall, and I may have unavoidable sinful activities, but still I'll never give up my worship to Krishna. And such determination, Krishna says, is praiseworthy. But then someone may ask, Arjuna says, why do you accept the worship of such an irreligious person? Why do you eat the things he offers? Why do you drink the drinks he gives you? If his heart is contaminated by lust and anger and other faults. And then Krishna answers, because he becomes religious. He becomes righteous by his behavior because he has the right mentality. His intention is good. And soon he will achieve peace. So then he said, this means that immediately after he commits some impropriety, he immediately feels bad. And he immediately thinks, oh, alas, alas, what a horrible person I am. I've just committed some sinful activity, but I'm going to keep serving Krishna. I'm determined to serve Krishna. And therefore, he quickly becomes righteous. Again and again, even he feels remorse like this, and he eventually achieves complete detachment and peace. And so then Arjuna says, well, but still, someone may say, if he actually becomes religious, then no problem. We see him as a Sada when we understand you protect him. But what if he doesn't? What if he stays and he keeps falling down over and over again? And so then Krishna answers, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, this time he answers and he's a little annoyed. He actually gets a little angry. And he says, my devotee never perishes. Even when he is in that position, he never falls down. And then he says, so Arjuna, he's a little concerned because he's anticipating that people are not going to believe this. Now, that's another interesting point that Vishwanath Chakravarti takes. It's that not that Arjuna is thinking, well, maybe he's wrong. Maybe Krishna is making a mistake. Maybe these people are really fallen and Krishna's just such a nice guy that he's overlooking the faults, but we shouldn't overlook the faults. No, Krishna says, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Arjuna was concerned that maybe people wouldn't believe Krishna, that Krishna is willing to protect his devotee in all circumstances, that he'll do whatever's necessary to protect his devotee. And what Krishna sees as his devotee is the intention in the heart. And so Krishna says to Arjuna, go out into the people, to the general populace, and make a big tumultuous sound, ring cartels, blow horns, bugles, conch shells, go tell it on the mountain that my devotee will never perish. That no matter what happens, my devotee will never perish. So then they may not believe me because Krishna is already thinking, well, you know, I said I wouldn't fight in the battle, but in a few days I'm actually going to pick up a chariot wheel and I'm going to go running at Bhishma. And I sometimes, to save my devotee, even I break my own promise. So people may not even believe me. But Arjuna, if you say it, then people will see it as carved in stone. So therefore, you go out, make a loud noise, and declare it, my devotee will never perish. So we can be so confident of Krishna's mercy to his devotee that even he has to appear as a fish, or even he has to appear as a tortoise, or even he has to appear in any way, whatever it takes, Krishna will come and he will help the devotee, if the devotee has that sincere desire in his heart. And one thing we should understand is that we, tiny little pipsqueak jiva, overcome by material energy living in Kali Yuga, may not be able to understand exactly who is a devotee, how to see in the heart of the living entity whether this person is actually very advanced or whether this person is not very. But Krishna, he has no problem. And if you're going to make a mistake, better to err on the side of seeing him as a devotee, because the other side is quite dangerous. And it's interesting, how the Bhagavatam is set up in such a way that it takes us through so many different times that Krishna comes in and saves his devotee, that by the time we get to the 10th canto, we can have confidence that Krishna has the ability, Krishna will do whatever's necessary, and will have a burning desire to meet that Ashraya, that supreme shelter, that supreme personality of Godhead. So in the 10th canto, where we actually meet Krishna face to face, we will have the faith and the prerequisites for actually coming in contact with Krishna in the proper mentality. So I'm going to end there. And if there's any questions, then I'll try to answer. And if not, I'll tell you something else. Hare Krishna.
I was just observing, it's kind of interesting, you know, we all know the story of Noah and from the Bible, you know, but it's interesting in this one, King Satyavrata, he didn't have to build anything, it just kind of showed up.
Yeah, the ark came completely built.
Of course, I don't know, somebody had to build it. Anyway, it was kind of interesting.
Maybe. Krishna, just by his desire, you know, he has that icha shakti, that just by his desire, things become manifest. Anybody else? So I just want to take a second, a minute, and connect this, because it's very interesting how these stories all connect together, and soon is Purushottam Mass. And Purushottam Mass actually also is the incarnation of Krishna coming to save his devotee, to take care of his devotee. I have this little book. It's all about the month of Purushottama. And it's put together from the Padma Purana, from the Purushottam Mass Mahatmya. And so you read a little bit, if you read the community newsletter, a little bit about the month, you know, this Mala Mass means bad month or inauspicious month, and how she appeared and she went to, actually she was originally the daughter of a great sage. Her mother passed away. She was kind of not taken care of very well by him. He didn't arrange for her marriage. And before she got married, he died. And so she became very disturbed because she had no family anymore to protect her. She was in anxiety. Durvasa Muni came to visit the ashram because he was friends with her father, to find that the father had passed away. And she served him very nicely, and he offered her a benediction. So she lamented to him, cried, wailed, carried on that, you know, she was very sad because she had no family, no one was protecting her. And that he gave her the benediction that she should worship Purushottama Mass. And so this sadvi, she got angry with Durvasa, and she said to him that, what are you telling me to worship Mala Mass for? Mala Mass is so inauspicious. And so then, you know, Durvasa, he's not so famous for having a mild temper. So he got very angry with her for not listening to him and not really accepting his benediction. And so he didn't curse her because he felt sorry for her. But he said there was nothing he could do because she had disrespected Purushottama. She would have to suffer. And immediately she became ugly. She became bereft of all her good qualities, everything. And she became in a suffering condition. So in that suffering condition, she worshipped Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva gave her a benediction because of her worship. She worshipped him for like 10,000 years. And Lord Shiva gave her a benediction. He said, whatever you want. And she said, I want five. I want a husband. 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 She said it five times. And so he said to her, and then he said, okay, you'll have five husbands. And she said, no, I don't, you know, I didn't mean that. Don't take me literally. It's not good to have five husbands. So he said, well, listen, first you offended Purushottama Mass, and now you're offending again. Now you have to take this benediction. You're going to have five husbands, and that's all there is to it. And so, and then again, the Panduvas were told the story of Purushottama Mass by Krishna, because when they were in the forest and they had lost everything, they had lost their kingdom, they had lost everything, there was Draupadi and her five husbands, and they were miserable. And at first when Krishna saw them, he became very angry at Duryodhana, but then he told them the story of Purushottama Mass. And he said, you know, you were in the forest during Purushottama, but you neglected again. Draupadi already neglected to worship Purushottama. She offended Purushottama before. Now again, you've neglected to worship Purushottama Mass. So now you've lost everything. You're out here in the woods. You've lost your kingdom. So please, the upcoming Purushottama that's coming, you better worship properly during Purushottama. Respect Purushottama Mass. And then it's described that because they did, they got everything back. They got their kingdom back, and everything was restored to them. Now, Purushottama, I started to say at the beginning and then kind of went off, she had approached Vishnu for help, and Krishna said, okay, I thank you. I wanted to read this because it's really nicely written the way it's here. Hearing the words... that's the wrong one. I just want to get the right quote here. Lord Krishna continued. So Vishnu took her by the hand, Purushottama Mass, but she wasn't named that then. And he took her to Krishna Loka, to Goloka, and he introduced her to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna was very pleased to see you, and very pleased to see her. And he was very, very kind to her. And he said that, I wanna take care of you because you've been so neglected and so abused and so unhappy. So actually what I'm going to do is I'm gonna make you as good as me. That whoever comes in contact with you will be as good as coming in contact with me. And whatever potencies I have, this month will also have. Whatever mercy I have, this month will also have. And whoever takes advantage of this month will get the advantage of taking shelter of me. So if we chant Hare Krishna nicely, and it's interesting, Purushottam Mas doesn't really ask us for any great austerities like Chaturmasya does or Kartik Vrat. You know, we don't go through these heavy vratas during, just we're asked to please remember Krishna, chant his holy name, specifically to chant his holy name, bathe in the sacred places, and give in charity, especially for grihasthas, that they should give in charity in this month. And those three simple things, no big heavy performances, those three things during Purushottam Mas will give one the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes. Well, because Purushottam Mas, first of all, only comes every 2.5 years, and there's no holidays. Nothing ever happens during Purushottam. There's only the two Ekadasis. There's no other, the sun doesn't enter into, and there's no Sukranti, so the sun doesn't enter into any auspicious signs. There's no holidays. There's nothing worshipped during Purushottam Mas. So she was feeling very neglected and unhappy. And she had gotten a really bad reputation. Actually, it says in here that Mala Mas, maybe we can get some help from Pandaji here, that it means stool month. Stool month is the translation. That actually, like, she was scorned like stool. People would run from her. And so Krishna felt so sorry for her that he gave her such a wonder, because Krishna is Patita Pavan. So when someone is really miserable and suffering, then he gives them special mercy. And when Vishnu took her to Krishna, Krishna said, thank you for bringing her to me. You've done the right thing. And it's actually, even Vishnu, you'll be glorified more because you've taken care of this poor, pathetic month. And you've brought her to me, and now I give her this benediction. Okay, so Krishna is the ashraya, and when we're most poor and most pathetic, then Krishna will give us the most shelter. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.